A moderate Islamist party is claiming victory in the elections in Tunisia, where the Arab revolt began. The longtime Tunisian dictator was ousted in January. That sparked other revolts across North Africa and the Middle East. Now, over the weekend, Libya's interim leader said that country's new constitution will be based on Sharia law. In Egypt, the Islamist Muslim Brotherhood is jockeying for position in the post-Mubarak political landscape. And in the New York Times, David Kirkpatrick reminds us that when Islamists scored an election victory in Algeria 20 years ago, a military coup backed by the CAA and a bloody civil war followed. And in the Palestinian territories, remember when Hamas's election victory in 2006 led to armed conflict in Gaza. So the question is, what are the implications of the current Islamist power surge? Journalist Thanasi Kambanis is well-versed in this. He's working on a new book about Egypt post-Hosni Mubarak. He joins us now. And Thanasi, first, welcome back to Here and Now.
Always great to be with you, Robin.
And you remind us, we have been saying, as others have been sort of, you know, sort of capturing this in the bumper sticker, is an Islamist winter coming out of the Arab Spring. But you're sort of opposed to that bumper sticker. Why?
Well, first of all, I don't like the term Arab Spring because it suggests that this great uprising and upheaval in the Arab world is some kind of passive and temporary state, as opposed to the product of a real concerted expression of the popular will in a sustained uprising in which people have taken their faith into their hands. And what follows from that is a different understanding of what the new vigor of the Islamist movement represents. Islamism is the culture of the contemporary Arab world, and it's something that's been brewing and gaining strength for nearly a century, and it spans everything from doctrinaire, ultra-conservative religious fundamentalists to progressive liberals who support something like a secular state, but in the tradition of Islamic law, much like we in the United States view our constitution as the outgrowth of Judeo-Christian tradition. So it's really important to understand that Islamism can describe Al-Qaeda, and it can describe enlightened Western-friendly secular liberals who view themselves as governing in the Islamic tradition.
Sure, and an Islamist winter implies deadening, and you're saying that's not the only choice. And the group, I believe I'm pronouncing this, Ennahda, that's the Islamist group, although they've changed their name to an Islamic group because they know the misunderstanding about Islamist, but this is the group that's doing quite well in Tunisia. They say they are moderate, and that in fact that they will help bring out more moderate Islamists in other countries. Tell us more about this group in Tunisia. Do you agree with that characterization of it?
Well, I mean, first of all, we have to see what they do in power. Their rhetoric has so far been largely comforting to a Western perspective, and has been quite appealing to the Tunisian public. Now, they've never they've never had power. We're going to see whether their promise of pluralism and joint consultation is really going to become a reality. I mean, for example, they've said they're not going to try and control and dominate the drafting of a constitution. They're going to work closely with secular forces and the sort of entire spectrum of Tunisian political thought.
But you think that they will inspire the more moderate forces?
There's a strange presumption when we talk about Islamists that they don't mean what they say, and I don't really have any evidence from that in my own reporting. So there's this presumption that when the Islamists say they're going to respect elections or they're going to respect other people's point of view, it's just some kind of tactic that they're using to get power, and then as soon as they're in power, they're just going to run roughshod over everybody else. I don't see evidence for that, because the authoritarian Islamists out there are authoritarian in their rhetoric and their doctrine from the beginning, and the ones who have espoused liberalism, like those who govern Turkey, also more or less kept their words. So with the Tunisians, there's no reason not to believe them. Of course, in politics, people have sold out their promises in all kinds of ways, and a lot of let's not forget, a lot of secular liberals with wonderful ideas have ended up being the Gaddafis and Mubaraks of this world and ruled quite nastily.
Not to mention Saddam Hussein. But I take your point, but I actually meant, you know, given that they do seem to be moderate. I mean, the daughter of the party's founder has been speaking out. She's a career woman. She talks about pluralism and accepting diversity. And my question is, do you think, as some observers do, that the fact that they are having some success in Tunisia will empower the more moderates in other countries to push for that kind of thinking within other groups, like the Muslim Brotherhood, say?
I would hope so and expect so. And really what we're going to see in the coming 10 or 20 years, if there are transitions away from authoritarian rule effectively in countries like Syria and Egypt, what we're going to see is the real political contest is going to take place within the Islamist part of the spectrum. So I think what we're going to end up with is a sort of the time-worn struggle between liberals and conservatives playing out within, almost exclusively within the Islamist space. So we'll have liberal Islamists in the mold of, say, Turkey's ruling party or the Ennahda party in Tunisia doing battle with groups like the Salafists who are currently in Egypt and who, you know, believe Christians shouldn't be allowed to be president and who have quite a dim view of the rights of women and minorities. And that's going to be, it's going to be all phrased within religious language, and it's all going to be coming from an Islamist perspective. For a group like the Muslim Brotherhood, that's going to involve some kind of split, because right now the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt is an umbrella group that includes real hardliners and some amount of liberals, and eventually I think they're going to cleave in two along those lines.
I was going to ask you that. We have about a minute left. Where do you think Egypt is going? The military assumed power after President Mubarak stepped down. The Muslim Brotherhood playing a bigger role than it had prior to that, but you say it might have to cleave itself. Just a few more seconds on Egypt.
I mean, right now the military is still in charge. It's still an authoritarian state, so we can't really talk about it yet as democratic politics. But if it does become an elected, accountable democracy, Islamists are going to hold the majority of the cards, and they're really going to set the agenda, and that's where we're going to start to see a real hard struggle between the fundamentalists and let's say, the progressive Islamists.
Thanasi Kambanis of the Boston Globe. His latest book is A Privilege to Die: Inside Hezbollah's Legions and Their Endless War Against Israel. It's now out in paperback, but as we said, we're awaiting his new book on Egypt. He's been spending quite a bit of time there. Thanasi, we'll have you back when that is out. Thank you so much.